Good morning, welcome back to Nachyam. Today we're going to be learning Dibrei Hayomim Aleph, Perek Zayin, the 7th chapter of Dibrei Hayomim 1. And in this Perek, we're now moving our way through the different Shvatim, the different tribes, in understanding their family dynamics. This is part of the lists of the first 9 Prakim of Dibrei Hayomim Aleph. And we're going to follow through with the tribes of Yisachar, Naphtali, Ephraim, Menashe, and Asher. So let's start at the beginning. The first 5 psukim are dedicated to the tribe of Yisachar, and we hear about his children, Tola, Pua, Upuva, or Pua, Yoshuv, Shimron, and Shimron. These are the 4 children of Naphtali, and we hear about the warriors in his family. So we hear about the children and the amount of warriors that contributed at the times of David. Gibore Achayel, the Toldosom, Misparam, Bimei David. At the times of David, we hear about 22,600, 36,000, and 87,000 in different groups of the family genealogy and the warriors that contributed to the war effort at the times of David. We do not hear about the boundaries of the area of Yisachar or their cities, but we do know that some of the names that come up here are in fact cities in the area of Yisachar. We do hear about Tola ben Puva. Tola ben Puva was one of the Shoftim, one of the leaders during the period of Shoftim, who came from the tribe of Yisachar. Notice, by the way, that Tola and Puah are actually the original names of the sons of Yisachar. So this later on, Shofet, Tola ben Puva, actually is derived out of the names of 2 of the sons of Yisachar himself. It's worthwhile noting that why is it that Yisachar is the immediate next? We've just come through in Perek Zion, or was Perek Vav, where we heard about Levi. So why are we following Yisachar next? The Chida points out that he is in the same category as Levi. In the brachas of Yaakov, as it relates to Yisachar, Yisachar is also seen as a spiritual leader as well, like Levi is seen as a spiritual leader. And in fact, the Chida goes so far as to say that when Yaakov Avinu made the dedication that he would give Kol Asher Titnei Aser Asrei Nelach, that he would give to him a certain amount of tithe to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, he said, when it comes to one's assets, a person is supposed to give not just a tenth, but even up to a fifth in one's assets when it comes to tzedakah. And he said, well, Levi is 1/10, and Yisachar might add up to be the 5th. So this is the second son, so to speak, of the spiritual nature of teaching, which is therefore why he's conjoined to Levi at the end of the previous parak. Do we hear numbers? We don't hear the exact numbers of most of the tribes. So one reason is because they were really numerous. We see that Yisachar was able to produce great numbers from a small tribe of warriors. And the Ralbag suggests that, in fact, the numbers that we are getting are actually the numbers of the original census done at the end of the days of David via Yoav, the general of the army. So we're seeing some of the records that Ezra is marshalling is the records that were, in fact, available of the census at that time. We now move on to Psukim Vov to Yud Beis, where we hear about Binyamin. And we hear about Binyamin's children, Bela, Becher, Yediael, the 3 of the children, and we hear about their various families. In fact, Binyamin is divided into 2 sections in Dibrei Hayomim. One is here, where we hear about his warriors and how many they contributed. Whereas in the next Perek, in Perek Ches, we're going to hear about more about the focus of the expansion of his territory as well. We now move on to Naphtali, who's only given 1 pasuk here, pasuk Yud Gimel. We're told, B'nei Naphtali Yachatziel, Guni, Yetzer, Shalom, and B'nei Bilha. Very strange. Why only 1 pasuk here? Why is he called B'nei Bilha? So the Malbim points out, as the Rashi points out as well, that Ezra was working off a number of documents, a number of manuscripts that he was able to find in Babylon, and he was merging them. In fact, Rashi describes that there were 3 Svarim that Ezra had access to, and he merged them to create the Dibrei Hayomim that we have here in these first 9 Prakim. However, though even merging them all, he did not have access to the annals of history and the Yichus of Naphtali to a large degree, and Dan. So what's happened over here, Dan and Zvulun and Naphtali are really, really left out. And all that's given over here is B'nai Bila. This is kind of what we have of B'nai Bila in the records that Ezra had access to when he was writing the Sefer Divrei Hayamim. We now move on to Psukim Yudalad to Choftes, in which we hear about the children of Yosef. So first we hear about Ephraim, Menashe, and then Ephraim, and then we hear about leading to Yehoshua bin Nun and the borders of Menashe and Ephraim. A few notes to take note of, and that is from Psukim Yudalad to Yudtes, we hear about Menashe, and in this we hear about Machir and Gilad and all the children, well, not all the children, but a focus on one line of the family. It's worthwhile noting why is this parasha next? Why is essentially Menashe right after Binyamin with the one pasuk of Naphtali in between? The reason is, the Dat Mikra, is because we see that there is a marriage between Menashe and Binyamin. In pasuk Tesvav, we see that Machir marries Isha Lechupim Uleshupim. So he's marrying into the Binyamin family. These are children of Binyamin. So there's an intermarriage that goes on. In fact, this connection between Binyamin and Menashe is a very significant one. We see that at the times of the civil war, which almost completely destroys the tribe of Binyamin in Pelegesh Begiv at the end of Sefer Shoftim, we know that the people come to the aid or do not come to fight against Binyamin are Yavesh Gilad, so that's from the tribe of Menashe. And ultimately, when Yavesh Gilad is under distress at the times of Shaul HaMelech, they call out to Shaul, and Shaul, as from the tribe of Binyamin, goes and saves. And there's a great connection between the two tribes, and that's also part of the reason why they are placed next to each other in this Yichus as well. Interesting thing to notice is in Pasuk Yudches we hear about Achosoi Hamoleches. We hear about the sister of Gilad who was a ruler. What does this refer to? So it could be referring to the wife of Chetzron from the family of Yehuda, who he married later on in life, and she could be called Moleches. She was a ruler, as the Ralbag points out, because she was appointed to his whole family. And this could be because he was much older, and she was given the full jurisdiction of all the major decisions, which is being described over here, which is perhaps just one interesting detail in the story. When we move over to Ephraim, we find a very fascinating story which unfolds in front of us. Ephraim is listed primarily between Psukim Chav to Chav Dalet. And in the section we hear about the children, some of the children, Zovad, Shoselach, Ezer, Elad, and they were killed by the Anshei Gas. The people of Gat killed some of the children, or the grandchildren of Ephraim, and they, when they went to get their their cattle, their flocks. Ephraim himself was terribly distressed, and he mourned for them for a great amount of time, and all his brethren came to give him comfort. And we're told that at such a time he had a relationship with his wife and had a child called Briah. Briah from the word Bera, that they were born in the sort of the shadow of this death as well. And we hear about She'era, his daughter, who builds these three cities, Beis Churun HaTachton, and the Elyon, and Uzain She'era. She was obviously a very powerful figure. Just a few things to think about over here. Is what happened? Why were Zovad, Shoselach, Ezer, and Elad killed by the people of Gat? So the Chida points out, quoting the idea that Chazal would understand over here, is that this was during the time of the Golus Mitzrayim, the exile in Egypt, and the children of Ephraim made a break for it. They tried to escape Egypt. They successfully did escape Egypt, but when they entered the land of Canaan, they came in through the area of Gaza. Gaza was controlled by the Philistines, and they were murdered by the people of Gat, who were Philistines. So it was a terrible tragedy that occurred as they tried to break out early. Why were they breaking out early? So the Chida explains that because they thought that the Golos of Mitzrayim was only a function of the Mechiras Yosef. And because they were Yosef, Ephraim is from Yosef, they felt that they were not subject to the Golos of Mitzrayim, and therefore they wanted to get out early. In fact, they were misunderstanding it, that the Golos of Mitzrayim was a function of the Bris Ben Abbasarim, the covenant between the parts in Parshas Lech Lecha, not as a function of Mechiras Yosef. Mechiras Yosef was simply the vehicle to arrive at the ends of that prophecy, and they were killed. It's interesting, the Radak disagrees with this and says, look, if Ephraim is mourning for them, means Ephraim is still alive, and he suggests that perhaps this was actually during the time of, a little bit later on, even he says it was during the times of the desert. How does he know? He says if you look at the numbers, the beginning of the desert experience and the numbers the end of the desert experience, at the beginning and end of the 40 years, you'll see there are many fewer children of Ephraim at the end than there were at the beginning, suggesting that this could have actually happened when they were on the borders, the outskirts of Israel, and Ephraim sent in a covert mission and they were killed by the people of Gat at that point in time. And it could be, suggests the Radak, that yes, maybe Ephraim was still around, in fact, and therefore he did mourn their loss even at such a time, during the times in the desert. So just a different way of looking at the narrative according to the Radak. It's worthwhile noting the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi Beis and Beis, asks a famous question that the Gemara says, who were those who were resurrected? Who were the dry bones resurrected in the valley of Dura by Yechezkel Hanavi? And one of the suggestions of the Gemara is it was these children of Ephraim who were resurrected from their dead. From the dead. It's interesting that all the other examples the Gemara gives are people who gave up hope. Those people who denied Tchias HaMesim, all kinds of other people who people don't have any mitzvahs to them. Why were the B'nai Ephraim placed in the same category? Surely they were trying to do a great act of heroism and try to break through the Golus. And the answer that the Maharal gives on this Gemara is simply because they were doing this out of desperation, not out of hope. It was out of lack of hope. People do many courageous things in a lack of hope because they don't care about their lives. And that's what was really happening here, because they had really given up on the possibility of Geula. It's also worthwhile noting in the section about the conquests of Sheera, who was the daughter from the family of Ephraim, these cities that she built, right, Churon HaTachton and HaElyon and Uzain Sheera, are an indication, says the Dan Mikra, that these are cities built by Ephraim already predating the exile down to Egypt, which gives you a sense that during the rule of Yosef, there was a colony, an Egyptian, so to speak, colony under Ephraim already in the land of Israel, which indicates that there was a continued presence of Israelites in the land of Israel, even perhaps through the Egyptian exile. That's a very, very, very fascinating point. We go on to hear the family of Yeshua ben Nun, how we get to him, and we hear about the borders of Menashe and Ephraim, which we don't hear about with the other tribes, from Sukkim Chof Ches to Chof Tes. It's also worthwhile noting that we do have the son, Briah, who is really the focus of who's the youngest child of Ephraim. There's also the youngest child of Menashe, is also Ephraim and Binyamin are both Briah, and you see that there seems to be a connection between Ephraim and Binyamin in this way as well. Finally, the parak closes the last 11 Sukkim, Lamed to Mem, talking about Asher, his boundaries, and his warriors. Warriors, we also hear about B'nai Briah. There's a Briah in the family of Asher as well. There we also hear Yimna, Yishva, Yishvi, Briah, and Serach. Serach was the Bas Asher, and we hear about all their soldiers that they contributed. We also hear at the end of this whole description of his army that he was able to marshal, B'nai Asher, Roshei, Beis Aves, Berurim, Giborei, Chayalim, Roshei, Nesiyim. They were selected, dedicated leaders of the soldiers. So the Chida points out that one of the prerequisites for merit in war is yichus, is having a good, clear lineage in one's family, whereas the Malbim says that all of these are, in fact, different aspects of success, whether it be their actions as roshim, as leaders, whether it be berurim, that they come from a good family, whether it be that they are nesiim, that their leadership has led them to this position, all these things, their leadership, their actions, their yichus are all contributing factors as well. We don't hear so much about all the children, just the youngest one of Briah, which again suggests another commonality between Ephraim, Binyamin, and Asher. And it could be, says the Dat Mikra, that in fact they all lived around the area of Shechem when they first came into the land of Israel, before Asher went out and expanded his territory and conquered his territory, because it's clear from Sefer Yoshua that Asher did not conquer his territory fully at the beginning. So maybe they started off together sort of in the incubation stage before they expanded to fill their territories. This now concludes our perek, and we have now perek ches ahead of us. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.